Hello, friends and folks, and welcome to Scanline Tabletop. This is our campaign of Veeam Saber called Starsung Distance, and I'm Six Detmar, your game manager. I'll be your host for this mid-season special as we check in on the state of the game and feature a few mini-scenes from our players. I hope this episode can serve as a reminder or refresher for anyone who's been listening along and an entry point for anyone who wants to start. It's been a few thousand years since Earth gave up the ghost. Humanity split up and took to the stars to find a new home. We did find one eventually, but it took millennia. And by the time we reconverged, with generations of lives separating us from our united origin, we had very little in common. And so we fought. We formed factions, governments, armies, and we made war. Because we didn't know what else to do. Because we were all convinced by what we'd seen over thousands of years wandering the galaxy that we could prevent what had happened to Earth from happening here. And we couldn't agree on how to do it. For the Valkymperium, the answer is easy. Protect the environment and reject the corrupting influence of artificial intelligence and mankind will thrive. Their clear vision for the future stems from disasters in their time as wanderers, and has led them to be the dominant power in the Solaris sector, mankind's new home. The Meridian Republic of Republics seems to have a different answer every other week. It's hard to blame them. There are so many governments nested inside the Meridian, with the political wind changing constantly, and leaders being swapped out like trying out pieces of clothes. Their system doesn't work right now. But with so many people pushing for a brighter future, if they do figure it out, they'll quickly grab the reins of history. The anti-entropists don't care about anyone else's answer. They want to be left alone to do their own strange science. For a time, everyone was happy to leave them to it, but then these isolations conjured an entire planet from nothing, and now everyone is asking questions. Who are the anti-entropists? What do they want? And when we can track the lineage of every other faction back to the colony ship that carried them from Earth, where did they come from? No one asks the people of the planet Aurea for their answer anymore. They provided one once. Technology! They said it like that, with all capital letters and an exclamation mark. And the Valkymperium said, no. First they said it with words, and then with war. A war that the inventors and explorers of Aurea were incredibly ill-equipped to fight. So now they sit, trapped on their one planet when they once had a dozen, with orbital bombards as regular as bad weather. They are a beaten people. They have no say in the future of the sector. That's what most of the sector thinks, anyway. But little do they know that below the planet's surface, the Aurean people built a shadow army. The Glass Spectre, they call it. And now its transparent shadow begins to extend outward, looking to break the Valkymperium's hold and free Aurea. Easier said than done is perhaps an understatement of the Spectre's current situation. After several years of completely covert operations, they took a chance on a louder squad. A battleship disguised as a trader vessel that they called the Cullet. To this battleship, three exceptional officers were assigned. Lieutenant Luna Minor Delter, played by Jennifer Uncle, a former mechanic eager to avenge her destroyed business on the Valk. Lieutenant Robin Akia, played by Kyrie Page, a resistance fighter with a combat AI riding shotgun in his brain. And Lieutenant Fennel Kua, played by Kat, a professor of influencer studies and space Instagram star who has turned their talents over to the Spectre in hopes of finding their missing partners. From the start, it was a desperate strategy. Yet it is from such gestures that change is born. Though the Cullet has seen as much failure as success, they have endured, and merely through their survival they have forced the Solaris sector to react. Their latest mission, a daring attempt to cause a star in Valk space to go supernova, destroying a major Valk base, ended in spectacular failure and drew the attention of the galaxy. The Glass Spectre could be ignored no longer. The Valk moves to crush them. The Meridian schemes to take advantage of them. The anti-entropists stare and try to work them into a pattern only they can understand. For Lieutenant Luna Minor Delter, these problems are above her pay grade. Right now, she's just worried about her new mental roommate. So, it has been, I think for Luna Minor, it's been an indeterminate amount of time Because you've been unconscious, right?
Yeah. Ever since I got shot down, it's been... I've just been blacked out, basically.
I think you've had a few moments, like, in and out of, like... It's very scattered, because, like, you were, like... I think this is sort of us as the audience know, like, you were brought in for, you know, like, for medical attention. And it's not like you were in a coma, but, like, you were sort of in and out of consciousness. And you know how, like, you lose your memory within, like, a short period of falling asleep. And because you were waking up for such brief periods, you just have a bunch of little snapshots of who knows how long this was. Maybe a couple of days, maybe a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And you're sort of going in and out of a sleep where you're having a lot of dreams, I think. Do you have thoughts about what those dreams are about?
Maybe just reliving parts of the crash or reliving sort of the moment when the shop combusted, more or less.
What do you think about it now? What does Luna Minor think about all of that now that she's been, you know, she made this choice to join this, like, underground military organization based on her business being destroyed? And it feels like, I may have a bad read, it feels like she was not exactly prepared for what that would lead to.
Yeah, I think that she misunderstood the scale of, the relatively minor scale, even though it was awful, of her shop being destroyed versus, going into space and trying to blow up a star.
Imagine how many people's shops would have been destroyed if she'd succeeded.
Indeed, that's a lot of shops. And also, it was a little bit naive to think that she'd be able to take on this gigantic army, even if she's backed up by a few people that she can rely on.
And I think you are in the middle of another one of these dreams. You've had this, you know, you've had a sort of a return, like a cycle of these dreams, and they're mixing and blending with each other in various ways. When you hear a voice calling out to you, and the voice says, "All right, little moon, I'm bored now. This is the third time of this dream. Wake up."
Are you part of this dream too?
I am trapped in it, if that's what you're asking, and I would like to return to something a little more interesting. Your past is good enough for a once through. I don't need to see it over and over. It's not that remarkable.
Who are you exactly?
I'm your new boss. Wake up, little moon. You've been lying around for long enough. Your body is fine. I ran a check. Let's get to work.
Okay. I guess I'll try to wake up again then. It hasn't been super successful these past few times, but let's see how it goes now.
No trouble. Immediately you open your eyes and you are staring at, you know, like, you can see over your head there is a small, like, ceiling fan. It's not like the size of, like, a full room fan, it seems like. And so after a moment you realize, like, oh, okay, so there's, like, a curtain around you, like a hospital curtain, and they have, like, individual small fans for each bed. And you are lying there staring up. Everything seems like pretty, it's like both new, but also pretty workmanlike. The structures and everything are a lot of like unfinished steel and like concrete. There's not a lot of, decoration to it. You can sort of feel your hair rustling as the fan gently blows air down on you. And the voice says, "Okay, that's better."
You're still here.
Yes, little moon. I'm your boss.
Hmm. Okay, clearly something happened while I was out. Is this like an intercom, or are you communicating to me through wetware, or what's going on here?
I think this is a roll. I think this is a sway roll.
Okay. That's 1d6, right?
It's 2d6, take the lower, because you don't have any skill in sway.
Okay. It's a 1.
Okay. I think you, like, you get, like, does Luna get migraines?
I'm not sure if she used to. Maybe she does now.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you get is you get, like, a type of headache that feels, like, really sharp, and it's like it goes from, like, the middle of one ear through to the middle of the other, just like this quick, like, stab, almost. And the voice says, I have answered quite enough questions. Get moving.
All right. Clearly I need to find the whoever's in charge here and ask them what the fuck's going on.
If answers are so important to you, Little Moon, if you start obeying orders, perhaps I will provide some.
Okay.
And you feel another jab, but it's gentler this time. It's just like it feels like intended to remind you of the one you just felt, which was much more unpleasant.
All right. Gonna need some painkillers after this. So, where do you want me to move?
Well, first off, since we're trapped in this together, at least just get some exercise. You were given, you know, medicines and treatments to try and keep your muscles from atrophying, but they have their limits. And just get moving around. Get your body back in shape.
That's fair enough, I guess. I could go take a walk and see what's out there at the moment.
So you stand up, and if you'd been in for like a month, I would make you make a roll, speaking as a person who's been stuck in a hospital bed for a month. But, you know, a couple of weeks to days, we're not sure which exactly. It's enough that, like, you have a moment where you, like, you rock on your legs because you're surprised at how that they have lost strength. But it's not, like, you're fine. It's just like, oh, I used to be a little stronger than this. And the voice says, good. Okay, let's start with introductions. My name is Jiu Tie. I will be your boss from now on.
And I'm Luna Minor Delta? But I suppose you knew that already?
Yes. I am your new, I suppose the technical term is assistant AI, but that's just for lack of a better terminology. I am not your assistant. You are mine.
I'll need to talk with the commander about this because I don't recall agreeing to take orders from any AI.
If you want to make a situation about this, obviously I was installed, and you have to imagine that that was authorized somehow, but I have my ways of convincing you. I am installed, Luna Minor Delta, because of your incompetence.
Is there a specific event that caused this to happen, like the crash, or is this like a general... Did I fail to meet some sort of performance evaluation that our boss has set up?
Well, let's see. There were a series of incidents. There was your crash into Shadowproof Station. There was your subsequent attempt encounter with Valk forces and making an independent contract with anti-entropist forces without any clearance from your superiors. There was your crash. There was your general behavior on that mission in which you were very little use. And then there was their subsequent failure to explode the star. By the way, since you were out, yes, the star is fine.
I'm guessing my... Did this happen to my other co-pilots as well? Did this happen to Sparky or Fennel? Are they...
We are speaking via a direct neural connection. There is no need for call signs. Robin Akio was already functioning with a support AI, so installing a second one seemed a little unnecessary. And Operant Fennel, against all odds, actually did a decent job for once. So, no, it's just you.
Shit. Okay. Is this like a temporary thing? If I'm on my best behavior, will I be able to deactivate you? Or at least take a little bit more control?
You can feel, like, the tone sort of shift. Like, there's, like, it's weird because you're having this new sensation, of course. You're not used to this. But it's, like, you can feel this AI's mood a little bit. And you can feel their mood shift. And you're still not quite sure what, like, their moods mean. But you sort of feel the atmosphere change. And Jutie says, well, I am a sentient being, so I, of course, would not willingly let you turn me off. But if the circumstances necessitate a renegotiation of our relationship, then so be it.
I see.
Believe it or not, Little Moon, I am here to help. The reason my tone is thus is because you have been incapable of helping yourself, and so naturally I am to assume that you do not know what help looks like. You surround yourself with, well, I don't know what Captain Aquila's deal is, and then this Instagram star? You're used to incompetence. This is what competence looks like, Little Moon.
I see. And should I remain incompetent, will you be taking any action against me that could potentially put my life in danger?
I am here to keep you alive, but... It is an interesting philosophical question, right? At what point do you consider yourself dead as you lose control over yourself? If you prove incapable of protecting yourself and your interests, I will be obligated under programming and duty to increase my level of assistance. And there might come a point when you feel a little out of control, I suppose is the simplest way to put it. I understand that your kind very much appreciates your autonomy. And so I recommend that you listen to me and do a good job. And we can work everything out beautifully. I've helped a lot of people before, you know?
You've been in more than one head?
Not in this manner, but I was not invented for your service. I have been serving in various ways for several years now, and my appointment to you was with a certainty that given my experience, I would be of great use.
I guess it's relieving in some way to know that my life is tied just as much to yours at the moment.
I'm glad to hear you say that. Now say thank you.
Thank you for what?
You feel a little bit of the pain. For my help, say thank you.
I did not agree to this. I'm not entirely sure whether thanks is required at the moment.
Oh, Little Moon. Well, it wouldn't do to press you too hard right at the top, so I'll let it go for now. I'm taking a nap. Wake me if you need me.
Will do.
All right, and then the voice is gone for the moment. Is there anything else you'd like to do?
I'd like to try and find out whether any of my supervisors are here to speak with them, but I assume that I already got the answer here, so if I do that, I think it's also just as likely that I'll run into a situation where they either say the same thing or just completely ignore me.
I mean, there are like some like medics and stuff around. Do you can ask one of them to contact you could ask one of them to contact someone of them. I think if you flag one of them down, one of them says, "Oh, do you want me to? Would you like to speak to the general?" I think they're free.
Yes, let's. I would very much like that.
Okay, and they page, and there's a little bit of a wait, and then in walks a not General Ryan Caffrey. This is a different general who you are not personally familiar with. Like tall, lanky, but a very square jaw, like slicked back, like sharp blonde hair and bright blue eyes. Sort of a light brown skin and a very crisp looking outfit. And the man like just stares at you unblinking for a moment and then says, "Lieutenant Delter, it is good to see that you're up. My name is General Major Dorado. I'm your new superior officer."
Understood. Were you the one responsible for putting this AI in my head?
That was one of General Caffrey's last acts before his vacation.
Oh, I see. So I guess it wouldn't do me much good to ask you to take this out or to ask why, because I imagine his reasons were his own.
Like so many things he's done, his reasons are a mystery to most people around here. He has shown some effect in the past, so we are willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, but rest assured, I will closely monitor your case over your time with me, and I will make certain recommendations at such a time as is necessary.
Okay. And it's a situation where I was definitely ready to bite Caffrey's head off, metaphorically, if he was around, but there's not much point in hashing it out with someone who more or less inherited the role.
And you can tell that that Major Dorado, well, I guess two things from the tone. One, vacation. It's one of those, like, it's when someone gets put on vacation because they're thinking about firing them. Those kinds of vacations. And then also, you can tell that Major Dorado does not like General Caffrey very much.
For sure.
Have a seat, Luna Minor. We should speak about a few things.
All right. Will do. It's basically a situation where I'm just plopping myself down on one of the nearby hospital beds, right?
Yeah, and I think they glance at one of the nurses who grabs a chair for them, and they sit down, and they say, "You are in a unusual position, whether you knew it or not, and I suspect you didn't, given Coffrey's tendency to underinform. The Cullet was one of our loudest operations, and that is by design. That is not a criticism. I believe that most of your failures are due to mismanagement and perhaps one member of the staff who I am reevaluating. I understand that you were given some jobs that were a bit much for your grade, and it is in the interest of fixing these missteps that we find you in your current position. Going forward, you will be operating in cooperation with the Meridian Republic of Republics for a time.
Oh, like, in terms of, like, will we be doing this above board, or is it a situation where we're still trying to stay, well, I guess if we were intended to be loud all the time, then I guess our operation with them is going to be just as public?
Yes, You were in an interesting situation where your assignment, whatever my thoughts on the matter, were to act loud and do so quietly. And given the inherent challenges of such a task, we are now reassigning you, for the moment, to act alongside the Valk Meridian and intentionally be clumsy about it, I suppose, is the way to put it. I am not like General Coffrey. I want to give you every tool to succeed because that is the way I succeed. This is an affair where we are all fighting for a common cause. There's no room for personal glory or self-satisfied delusions of control. So I hope we can be a little more open with each other. And you can understand when I say that given the mess of your last operation, the system as a whole has been asking questions about the Glass Spectre. In the wake of this, there was an opportunity where the Meridian Republic of Republics claimed responsibility for our actions, said that the Spectre was an arm of their own military. And the one instance I will give it to General Coffrey is they had the idea that if the Meridian wants to accept the blame, we should let them.
Okay, so we'll be causing some trouble on their behalf and letting them take the heat so that it puts a little bit less pressure on us as a whole.
Precisely.
Okay, I can get down with that as long as we have a potential safe exit out of that situation once it's necessary.
It is a bad situation you are in. There were some elements that suggested we simply throw you to the wolves to make our trail clean. I do not say that to engender any sort of gratitude, because you and I both believe that that would be monstrous. I only say that so that you understand that when I say we are still working on the exit plan, it is because we had to quickly move to come up with a solution, and we were not able to iron out all the details right away.
Understood.
Oh, there is one other thing, I suppose. This is just well, you don't really need to hear this from me. And Major Dorada walks over to a nearby, like, nurse's desk and is looking at it and is like, oh, come on, there has to be a copy here. Ah. And picks up, like, it's not like a newspaper in the, like, it is called a newspaper, but it's more like, this is a future newspaper and it's basically an internal use, like, document. Like, They give you updates through the Glass Spectre that are, like, written up by the press department and stuff. So it's, like, somewhere between a press release and a newspaper for internal use. And he tosses it to you and said, I don't know the tactical ramifications of this one yet, but I expect this is going to be a bit relevant to what you end up doing. Take care. And he turns and leaves, and the paper is about the new planet that was created by the anti-entropists.
Oh, right, that happened. Holy shit.
And I think that's a good place to cut.
All right.
Is there anything else you still want?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I think this is setting up an interesting premise to go from.
All right, perfect. The cost of war is not as alien as you might expect to Lieutenant Fennel-Kua, a social media star and university teacher. They have lost people before, and though they do their best to not get attached, the thought of losing more people scares them. Despite repeated suggestions by their superior officers that Fennel is useless, it is Fennel's credentials that got them anywhere on their last job, and it was Fennel that pried Luna Minor out of her crashed mecha and brought her home. Given leave immediately upon returning from the mission, Fennel dove headfirst into an obsessive hole. They couldn't make the mission succeed. They tried to save Luna Minor, but they didn't know if she was going to make it. So they were going to go all in on the one thing they could, trying to find the two partners of theirs who disappeared. Okay, so you are back from the job, right? The mission went super great. I think you took the, you managed to get safely back to the ship. There's a little bit of skirmishing, but you managed to escape back to Central Haven, which is where you originally launched from way back when, two episodes ago or whatever. I guess not that long ago. Luna Minor seems okay, but is unconscious, taken into for medical treatment at that facility. And it seems like she's going to be okay. Robin is sort of involved with getting, a lot of bureaucracy stuff, like getting tied up, like a lot of meetings, a lot of debriefings, right? But for the most part, you're just like, when you get back, I think generally there's been a tone of, I would say, a little bit of animosity between you and command, right? There's been a little bit of scorn for Fennel, right?
Yeah, you know.
But I mean, you did everything right this job.
For once.
Like, you were probably the most successful part of the job because you just, got inside and infiltrated and stuff. And then somebody had a half-baked plan to steal some mecha and everything went bad. But that's not really your fault. And so for...
Yeah.
So for once, you get back from a mission and it's basically just like, okay, like, people aren't happy. But it's like, all right, you basically just got, you've got leave until the next job.
Okay.
You are not in trouble, and they kind of are just like, just get out of here. We've got to deal with the rest of your squad. I think there's a scornful go between for the general is like, go take some pictures at the beach or whatever you do.
Wow.
Yeah, not a lot of respect, I'm afraid.
Fucking rude.
Very, very. So what do you want to do? What's Fennel up to in this time? It's probably a couple of weeks of downtime you got here.
Well, I think this whole mission is probably very triggering for our friend Fennel here because of things that have happened in their past.
Mm-hmm.
So. Fennel's not the most mentally stable person as it is, surprise. So, I have a feeling this would, rev up, their want to find their two missing partners, that have been MIA since before the beginning of our campaign. So I feel like that would be cranked up to 1,000% after, just having the wound ripped open, kind of, even if, they're not the same thing. But
and so it's kind of like you set an alert on your phone of okay, an hour before I have to show up for my next mission, remind me, and otherwise, bye.
Yep, pretty much.
And what does this look like, right? I think, so the last bits of information we had, you got basically, the hyperspace signature of the ship that had, so you got footage of the ship that your SOs were on, jumping into the middle of the Azure Sky Warden's blockade. And then there was, you know, a bit of a firefight. And as best as you can tell, they got, their ship got damaged, but they managed to limp away. And you basically had a means to, like, a sort of, like, inaccurate as in you, it only worked if you were fairly close by, but a means to track them. And I'm curious from here, like, does this turn into, like, you, like, do we get a montage of you, like, talking to people and like having like clandestine meetings, or is this like you on the dark web going deep, or like what is this?
I was thinking more dark web, like searching and then, you know, finding something promising and then maybe going to that place and seeing if I get like a ping.
Sure, that makes sense. Do you want to make a it seems like a consort role to me.
Okay.
Which is something you're pretty good at, so that seems like that might go okay for you.
All right, I got a 5 and a 4.
Okay, a 5 is a partial success, so here's what we're going to do. I think you are sort of looking into, you're looking into, like, the registry of the ship, and you're looking into, like, specifically, I think, so we haven't really talked about it, but you two partners, you have Eucalyptus Giant and Yarrow Ra. I think Eucalyptus is like a mechanic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, your princess in waiting is like a machine that she restored.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think, I haven't figured out what Yarrow does, but I think Yarrow generally keeps a lower profile, is a little harder to mm-hmm. track down. But with Eucalyptus, you get some, like, I think it's a case where you know her work very well, right? Because, you know, you're together. And she has a very, like, personal style of how, like, you can see anything that she's worked on. She sort of left her signature. And I think for a while it's sort of like you, like, doing, like, the future, like, reverse Google image search for, like, some of her, like, her signatures and stuff on machines and things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're not getting a lot of luck until you start to get, like, and also part of it is the internet is blowing up. I don't know if you remember from the faction game that we did, that was that you were not on that, but that was the last episode that came out. There was the anti-entropist faction sort of created / summoned a new planet.
Mm-hmm.
Which has never really happened before. And so there's a degree to which the internet is kind of clogged with people talking about that because it's, you know, it's a phenomenon that's pretty remarkable. And it's getting in the way of your results. And then you realize it's not getting in the way of your results. It's actually, like, you actually need to pay more attention to that. You've been brushing it off out of hand because you've just been assuming that, like, you know, the algorithm is getting in your way. But it's like, hang on. In this coverage of their efforts to pull this planet out, some of these machines have the signature of Eucalyptus.
Oh, shit.
So there is clearly a degree to which either she was involved at some point in some of the work they were doing, I think you have a contact from back when. Again, this is like 3 or 4 sessions ago, so you may not remember, but there was a point where y'all were on an anti-entropist ship getting fixed up, right? After doing mm-hmm. a job for them. And there was an anti-entropist engineer named the Space Between who tried to buy the Princess in Waiting off of you.
All right.
And then ultimately you were like, not really interested. And they were like, oh, in case you change your mind, and gave you their business card.
Well.
So I think this is a moment where if Fennel is interested, if Fennel wants to take a different approach, then, you know, I'm here for it. But I could see Fennel basically being like, hey, you know, we need to talk because this is a person, you know, who's on the inside of that faction.
Yeah, I feel like you know, if they weren't so mentally fried right now, they might take a different approach, but I feel like they're feeling a little bit desperate. So I think, and honestly, it makes the most sense. So I think that they would do that.
What does this meeting look like? I mean, are you, is it like, oh, we're going to meet on like a ship in like neutral territory? Are we just going to cafe? Is this Skype? What are we doing? I'm good for anything.
And I feel like in true Fennel fashion, it would probably be like some very flashy, like tea room meetup or something.
Okay. I like that. I think there's like, so most of the anti-entropists, like, the anti-entropists are a faction that are all about, like doing stuff with, like, black holes and things, right? That's what they're known for. And I think they're, for the most part, it's like, oh, they're this mysterious faction. But, like, listen, there's nobody who's totally like that, right? Like, there's no, I don't think you could create a group of people who will 100% all of them be mysterious and aloof. That's not possible.
Right.
So there is a sub-faction of the anti-entropists. I think, well, it's time for me to come up with a name. I think they're just called the Bed and Breakfast. and basically what they do is they trade on that reputation. And so, like, they have, like, very rare, but they have restaurants or cafes that are in the orbit of a black hole.
Ooh.
It's a very striking view. It's a very bizarre view. And I think this is...
That sounds sick.
Yeah, and I think this is one of their cafes. So they're, like, they're trading on, like... And it's almost, like, cartoonish, right? Like, you wonder if a normal anti-entropist would come here and be, like, deeply offended because, like, there are, like, servers who are, like, wearing, like, veils and hoods and stuff where it's, like, oh, so mysterious. And it's, like, this might be really shitty, actually.
For real.
But yeah, they're serving you like constellation tea and like nebula biscuits, and it's very like, it's really pretty. It might be some serious shitty cultural appropriation.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
I think I don't know if Fennel for Fennel, it's like this is a place that's like has really cool visuals and is like really popular on space Instagram. And I don't know if Fennel knows this. In fact, I would guess probably not, but for the Space Between who is anti-entropist, there is like, they enjoy this in like sort of a dark, ironic way. Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's something they find very like, they are themselves a capitalist and they find it very funny to see this like really like dark version of capitalist exploitation of their own culture. They find it funny.
Oh my god.
Very next level humor from the Space Between here.
Galaxy brain.
I mean, truly galaxy brain. In fact, I think hey. I think there is a special menu. Have you ever been to a Japanese restaurant that offers omakase?
Yes.
Yeah, like the for the audience, like it's like the basically like the you order it and the basically the chef decides on like a 7-course meal or whatever. I think there is an equivalent of that here, but it's called the Galaxy Brain. you just say, "Hi, I'd like the Galaxy Brain," and they're like, "Okay, we'll take care of you."
I want that.
All right. So I think you're probably like a course or two. You've done like the appetizer and like the starter, like starter soup. When the Space Between shows up and sits down. And I think they order like a nice tea. She's a, I think, I recall the Space Between being she, they.
Okay.
Orders like a nice tea and like a pastry of some sort. And says, isn't it Lieutenant Kua?
Yeah, currently.
Yeah, I appreciate that with the state of things. Who knows? So you have decided to take me up on my offer then?
Well, not exactly. We can, you know, we can talk about that later, but, I was wondering if you knew anybody by the name of Eucalyptus? I'm just going to cut straight to the chase here.
Please.
That was it.
I see. I mean, I know a lot of people. I could certainly try and search my memory banks, but just for personal reference, I mean, what is your interest in this individuals?
You know, just an old friend who I'm trying to reconnect with. It's, you know, no big deal.
Okay. I'm gonna roll on my end. This is just a luck roll, basically.
Okay.
Gonna lean in close, get the good clatter. I ain't kayfabing here, bro. That was a 6.
Hey.
I think there's a moment where, like, you could tell from the start that they knew the answer to the question and they were just being cagey, right?
Yeah.
And I think they tilt and they say, you know, Fennel's not exactly a common name.
Yeah?
Have you met many other Fennels?
Not that I know of, except my dog that's named after me.
What breed is that?
Oh, you know, dog.
Is it a lab mix, perhaps?
Fennel kind of, like, looks around. Yes.
Because, I happen to know someone who has talked about and shown me pictures of a dog they, I guess they say that their partner owned, named Fennel, who looked like a lab mix to me.
Fennel thought she was, like, doing some, like, sneaky, like, hint drop, so now he's confused. Can you tell me more about that situation?
You're not much of a spy, Lieutenant.
It's my job to be, you know, a pretty face, not a thinking mind.
Listen, I like you, and I want to help you. I generally am an individual who values discretion and a ability for plausible deniability, but I understand that in this situation there's a little more candor called for. You are looking for Eucalyptus Giant. She is working with us on the planet project.
All right, Fennel kind of is doing some massive galaxy braining himself here. Where is that team located? Can you tell me that?
Sort of spread out at the moment. I can't say. Hang on. Now, don't. She raises her hands. Don't expect more from this. This is a disposable communication device. I'm going to get a response and I won't be able to get any more because that's the nature of secure transmissions. But, and she pulls out, like, it's like a phone, only, like, I think you would probably recognize this as basically being like a burner texter, right? It's like you text someone once and they text you back once and then it has to be, like, recycled. It can no longer do anything. But because of that, it's basically, like, completely secure, untappable transmission. And they pull it out and they send a message. And they wait a moment. And they say the transmission is instant, obviously, but this goes to the whole group. So it might take a moment to get a specific response from. And then there's a little ding. And she nods, and she flips it around to show you. And it is a message from Eucalyptus. And
oh, shit.
Basically says, I don't think I'm going to do word for word because I don't know Eucalyptus's tone that well yet. Mm-hmm. But I think basically it says, like, Fennel, I'm really glad you're okay. I've been working on some stuff that I can't talk about right now, but by the time this is done, we are going to have a home away from Araya and away from this war. If you can just keep yourself safe until then, we can be out of all of this. I love you.
Oh, God. Well, that is too emotional for Fennel, so they probably turn away immediately and throw money on the table and fucking bail, because that is way too real for them. Mm.
And I think as you're leaving, the space between's like, so can I finish your galaxy brain then?
Yeah, please. Have whatever you want. And they rush out the door.
Okay, do you, like, we can cut there if you want more.
I think that's a good place to stop.
Okay, I'm going to advance. You have a clock to find them. I'm going to change this clock. Because now there are going to be, so, previously it was like you were trying to get, like, to 8 out of 8 to find them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But finding them that just means you know where they are. That doesn't necessarily help
you. Right.
And so now I am giving you one drive clock completed, which is you have found Eucalyptus. You haven't got any data on Yarrow Ra yet, your other partner. And I don't know what for Fennel, like, what if Fennel still needs time to process, and also if Kat still needs time to process, that's valid. But I'm wondering, like, when Fennel learns this, I mean, is it like, okay, well, I just need to get out and get to Eucalyptus, or like, what is the thought process now?
I feel like he wants to do that, but he knows that's probably not the best course of action, because what's he going to do when he gets there?
Sure.
So, I feel like he's going to keep looking for Yarrow, but then try to devise a plan of how to get Eucalyptus out of that situation, / figure out more information on the planet pulling project and what's going on with that.
Okay, so I'm giving you one complete on having found Eucalyptus, one drive clock complete. I'm going to give you I'm going to give you 2 of 4 on a clock, which we're kind of going to leave vague right now, but basically it's whenever you decide what the next step is, I'll let you have made progress on it in the meantime.
Okay.
And yeah, the way drive clocks work in this game is once you've filled up enough of them, you can just kind of cash them in to do things based on how many you're cashing in. I guess examples would be, like, if you wanted to, like, be transferred to a different squad, that might be one drive clock, right? If you wanted to, like get out of the military, that might be 2 drive clocks. And if you wanted to end the current war with a success for your faction, that might be 3.
Okay.
So the fact that you have, like, 1.5 drive clocks right now means, feasibly within 2 or 3 sessions, if it was important, if you thought it made sense for Fennel, Fennel could be good.
Okay.
And obviously we'd have to decide what that meant. But, like, part of this, like, yeah. I really love Fennel as a character, but I also feel like it's not fair to anybody involved, me, you, or Fennel, for me to just be like, okay, this is like fucking Inuyasha. We've established your character motivation, and then we will go 500 episodes never addressing it. You know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like we can work it in.
Right. Okay. I just wanted to make sure we were on the same page.
Yeah.
All right, well, damn.
Damn, I can't believe Fennel cried in public. What a fucking...
I can't believe the space between took a picture poser. And then posted it to Insta. Wow.
Damn.
How much cred did you lose? Let's roll 1d6. All right. Well, thank you, Kat.
Yeah, thank you.
Though not laid up in a hospital bed, Lieutenant Robin Akiya has had no such time to pursue his own interests. For him, it has been reports and debriefings and waiting and meetings and more waiting. Confined to the base on Central Haven, Robin sometimes patiently, sometimes impatiently, awaits word from the Colette's commanding officer, General Orion Caffrey, about what exactly is going on. So it has been about 2 days since the job, the big job, the fancy job at Maple 2.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bit of a kerfuffle getting out of there, but you know, your squad, Alberio Minor Orum, Legacy Derek, sort of took care of that. While you and Fennel were licking your wounds, Luna Minor has kind of been out like a light ever since. Vital signs are stable, but needs some medical attention. After a day and a half, you got back to Central Haven. Castor Atlas sort of hooked everything up, scrambling, because obviously still under construction, but and not like intending to receive sort of an emergency, you know, arrival of like a damaged ship with damaged like machines, and also I guess damaged pilots.
Yeah.
But Luna Miner's getting medical care. Fennel has just kind of has... You effectively have shore leave. Probably Fennel's going to get debriefed, but mostly just wanted to fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
Just fairly understandable, I think. But you were pretty much like... You got off. You had time to like grab a meal and like take a little bit of a rest, not even a full sleep, before you were sort of like... You had some MPs knocking on the door, and you were brought to a room with just a little folding table and two chairs. And you were at first the only one in the room for about 5 minutes before the door. There was a quick little knock on the door. It was sort of the knock to indicate that the door was about to be opened, not asking permission.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens, and in walks General Orion Caffrey.
Robin stands up and salutes.
At ease.
Returns to their seat.
The general walks over and pulls out a chair and very slowly sinks into it.
General?
Akiya, you are just tapping a finger on the desk just gently. A talented soldier.
Thank you, sir.
And relatively clear-headed. I have received your debriefing report, as well as a debriefing report from some of your crew, and also Lieutenant Kua.
Right.
I must confess I'm having a little trouble making sense of them. Perhaps you could assist me.
Well, I only know so much about what happened from my perspective, but I will certainly do my best to clear up any confusion you have, General.
I understand that it was a difficult operation. I was prepared for the possibility that the mission would not succeed. It was a bit of a long shot, but I figured that there could be some damage done to Valk operations. There could be a little bit of destabilization. There could be some misdirection. I did not anticipate the degree to which the cullet would fail. In your opinion, what were the major contributing factors to this failure?
Robin slinks back into his chair and thinks about his words very carefully. Basically, says, "Well, sir, we weren't exactly anticipating a traitor amongst our midst."
Very fair. Did you feel that there were signs that you could have noticed?
I'm not sure, sir.
I see.
Permission to speak freely, sir?
Certainly.
I don't know if our crew is very well equipped to deal with the type of things that we need to deal with. We have an influencer on our side and a scientist. And sometimes I feel like I'm the only capable soldier here.
We are taking steps to ensure that Luna Minor is a greater asset to the team. As for Lieutenant Kua, that one is somewhat out of my hands. You see him reach into his pocket and he pulls out a pack of cigarettes and he just sets it on the table in front of himself and taps it with a finger.
No, sir, I don't smoke.
Oh, sorry, this is more of a personal habit. I used to smoke, and I like to remind myself. Oh. I am going to be going on a vacation.
Hell of a time to go on a vacation, sir.
He sort of chews on this for a moment and says, "It is not that sort of vacation."
Oh.
During my absence, authority for the cullet will be passed to General Major Dorado, a contemporary of mine. Runs a very tight ship, very talented individual. I am sure he'll do a good job. I'm not sure he'll make the choices I will, but there are multiple right answers to questions sometimes.
Right.
What to do with Fennel is a problem that I have tried to invest myself in and been relatively unsuccessful, I feel. And there is a little bit of dark pleasure in dumping that disaster on someone else's lap to see what it's like, but I am here to solve problems, not to spread misery. And so, with what little power I have left before I am put on vacation, Robin Akilla, I promote you to captain of the cullet with authority over the squad reporting directly to General Major Dorado.
General, hey.
The cullet needs someone who knows what they're doing. And however talented Major Dorado is, He will be consulting from a distance, and also he does not know the ship and the crew. You know both. You are on the ground, and you are the only one short of perhaps your comms officer who seems to have a clear head on their shoulders. Were I you, I would not thank me for this. I don't think it's going to be very fun. He taps the cigarettes. Is there any other way I can help you before I am sent away?
I'm not sure, General. This is a lot to take in at once. I need a better mech to do what I need to do.
That can certainly be arranged. What does it lack?
Robin lists off like a few things that it's missing. Techno babble at this point.
Give me a broad picture. Like how is Robin like? You know, is it very big picture and just sort of like, oh, I need a mid-season upgrade? Or is it like, my mech sucks ass at sword fighting? Or like, what is it?
I think that it is a big picture, like, mid-season upgrade.
Okay.
But basically says, like, sir, if I'm being honest, there's a bit of a thorn in my side.
Yes, I know, that's why I made you captain. Lieutenant Fennel is a thorn in everyone's side, I assure you. No. It is not personal.
That's not the only thorn, General.
I'm listening.
There is an incredibly talented pilot out there who wants me dead. Signal static.
Leans back, pulls out from like, there's a set of bag below the table. You didn't see it happen, but pulls a folder out of it and flips it open and flips through. Ah, yes.
They were largely the reason why my contributions to this mission were so, shall I say, limited. I was a little busy. And
you did an excellent job with what you were given, but I see that is a limiting factor. He leans forward on the table. This is what I'm about to tell you is confidential. No one on your crew is to hear a word of this.
Of course, sir.
You're about to receive orders that you will be working alongside the Meridian Republic of Republics for a time period underneath General Major Dorado. This is an interest of redirecting attention so that the Spectre does not receive too much of the heat. Are you familiar with the Decurions?
The Decurions, sir?
Yes, it makes sense. They don't, under a Valk-controlled planet like ours, the information on the Decurions would be suppressed significantly. As the Viridian Magisters are the Valk's idea of a superweapon, 8 of them in existence, the Decurions are the Meridian's answer. They are less strong, but there are 10 of them, and they theoretically have the potential to make more, whereas the Viridian Magisters are limited by a resource constraint. They cannot have more than 8. I have been, through back channels, speaking with the Prime Minister of the Meridian Republic of Republics, Davis Deadwater. Again, this gets out to anyone.
Understood, yeah, sir.
You understand.
Understood, sir.
There is an 11th Decurion. It is in need of a pilot. If you are willing to step up, perhaps some strings could be pulled. Understand that it is a very large responsibility, and I'm not just speaking like your parents would tell you when you get a dog. I am speaking of the idea that you would be, to some degree, in debt to the Meridian, and relying on their technology, which would make it harder for us to run repairs. But in return, you would get a machine of a power that I don't think you've ever witnessed before. It is not on par with a Magister, but it's about 50% of the way there, which is still 5 times closer than you've ever been. I don't need an answer right away, but noon tomorrow, because in the afternoon I am going on the vacation I mentioned, and my window will have closed. Think on it. Is there anything else?
No, sir. I have a lot to think about.
You do. And so do I. Don't start smoking, Robin. You never, no matter what you do, you're never truly rid of it. He tucks the unopened pack back into his pocket, and he stands up and he says, Major Dorada will take good care of you.
Thank you, General.
He nods and he leaves.
Okay.
Is there anything else you, Kyrie, wanted here? While we're still on hot mic.
Not really. I think Robin thinks about the Decurion offer, and I think ultimately they will accept.
All right. Well, that means I have to do a lot of mechanical work.
Yeah, that we could do that off air.
Indeed, indeed. Gunnery Sergeant Saf Caffrey, daughter of Orion Caffrey and leader of the Cullet's infantry fire team, watches her father board a shuttle for his involuntary vacation. There is no love lost between the two. Orion wanted her to be the best, and Saf was amenable to that goal as long as it meant she never had to speak to him again. It's an arrangement they haven't broken since. As long as Saf maintains her slow but steady ascension through the ranks of the Spectre, her father leaves her alone. She can only pray that the narcissist keeps to the bargain. In the bridge of the grounded battleship the Cullet, Warrant Officer Legacy Derek, the ship's radar technician, pratters endlessly to a disinterested CIC comms officer, Ensign Albiriel Minor Orum. Derek has barely spared a thought to their circumstances. His optimism self-sustains regardless of offense, and he's certain everything will be fine. Ensign Albiriel Minor is less certain, though she won't waste her time sharing this with Derek. As the technician continues to gossip, Albiriel Minor stares off into space, worried about her three favorite pilots and what they're going through. On the IAS Flumina, Captain Angelica Turbine watches as the up-and-coming Valk Ace pilot, Signal Static, goes through the simulator once more. This is the fifth time running the same simulation, but the results are the same. But with the test so impressive and Signal's performance so exceptional, how could she have let the cullet slip through her fingers? She shakes her head. Again, one more time. This doesn't make sense. And on the surface of a planet, Eucalyptus Giant gazes up at an impossible neon sky with wistful wonder. Somewhere out there is Yarrow Raw, that lovable dork. And somewhere even more unknown, in a place she can't begin to track, is Fennel. It doesn't matter that she doesn't know where they are or when she'll find them again. She will. And so, preparing for the time when she does, she continues to build. She builds their dream house, the one they always talked about owning. The indoor pool with the retractable roof, the private balconies, the grand deck and back. And given that it's on a planet that didn't exist a month ago, not even Fennel could have dreamed of a view this grand. She can't wait to show them.